G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 25B.
So this morphogenetic field is forming all the forms because there is a morphic resonance. We would call it a reflection, that God is reflected in ideas. He calls it there is a morphic resonance, so that therefore new structures, new forms are popping up from that morphogenetic field. So it could see that like is actually influencing like, so that there, if there is once established a morphogenetic field, that influences the same species of that morphogenetic field, so that not only that, but that then there is a feedback from the forms back to the morphogenetic field. That means that if an information that has been gathered over time and time and time, over all the time and history, and has gathered in the morphogenic field, that if that forms now the various forms, that then these forms learn much quicker, because they give back what they have learned to the morphogenetic field, so that morphogenetic field always rises up and up in information, so that if something has been learned once, then everyone of the same species can learn it very much quicker than before. That is why we have this, at this moment in the whole world, this exponential growth of everything. A very quick growth of learning, of understanding, of investigation, of science, of knowledge, and so on, so that everything grows quicker and quicker in its understanding. Well, the impact of it is naturally very great. Namely, not only does the same species learn much quicker what earlier species had to take a long time, but the field is connected with every other field, so that there is a holistic field, that every genetic field is connected with every other. It makes a terrific universe of a morphogenetic field that brings forth constantly higher, and in a quicker sense, higher forms. All is related with all, and that gives all a holistic worldview. Now, what are the consequences of it, which he explains? Therefore, he says, it's something very natural in this case that we have intuition, that intuition can tell us much more than reason. As we have seen, that most scientists who have seen something new got it through intuition and not through the long road of reason. It explains inspiration, the suddenly popping up of a new idea, because it is just a formation that comes from the morphogenetic field. Therefore, telepathy, telekinesis, and all this is no more an abnormal or paranormal phenomena, but a very normal, but a very scientific phenomena. That therefore there is absolutely normal that we can know the past and know what the past of dead people, what they were thinking, what they were doing, just as Mrs. Eddy has explained it in spiritualism, where she said, though individuals have passed away, their mental environment remains to be described. You see, their mental environment, that would be the morphogenetic field, that remains to be described, remains to be discerned. You see, it can still be discerned and transmitted, because it can be transmitted because it's a field that has no time and no space, and therefore is everywhere at the same time. Mrs. Eddy goes on and says, though bodies are leagues apart and their associations forgotten, their associations float in the general atmosphere of the human mind. That's the morphogenetic field of which Sheldrake is talking, and of which Mrs. Eddy is talking in the fourth chapter. So that from that point on, all those phenomena like spiritualism can be explained. They are no more funny things, but they are explainable. Therefore, life after death is possible because mind does not die. Mind, we have seen, is independent of the brain. And therefore, mind is a part of the morphogenetic field of knowledge and therefore cannot be destroyed. Therefore, life remains. It is not subject to death. Therefore, he says, the power of prayer is something very scientific. That's no more a religious belief, that is a scientific fact, because prayer is an atmosphere of mind that is a formation of the morphogenetic field, which is timeless, spaceless, and therefore has the power of the infinite. Can you see what can come out of this new concept, that the whole world view is being overthrown, that we will have to have a completely new world view, so that everything becomes much more metaphysical, it goes away from the material, limited sense of a worldview, and we get the really metaphysical, spiritual Weltanschauung, worldview. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, that would be enough just to introduce again that sense that something is happening during this time, in this age, at the threshold to the next millennium, and we should be really wide awake what's going on. So, I want to summarize in a quick way what we were doing this week and see what is happening. We started out really with the question, what's going on in the world? We know that we have now one world and no more a world that is separated into tribes and into nations and into cultures and so on. Everything is one, and in the measure that we have one world, we naturally have a very, very complex world. And this world is not easy to be understood, and actually humans don't understand anymore that world. That's why everything gets out of gear. Everything is derailed, and we can almost see through that one world what is actually going on. Through our invention, through our ignorance, by putting a lot of water on that regulator, we were beginning to destroy nature. And as we begin to destroy nature, nature then at one point turns back and destroys us. And that is the situation we are in, that we feel that we are always on the brink of surviving or being destroyed. That it is either 5 to 12 or 5 after 12, we don't know quite what time it is, but it's a very, very difficult time that can bring in any kind of catastrophe. We know, for instance, today that every hour one kind of plant is destroyed forever, that every day one species of animal is destroyed forever. We know that in the next two decades, 20% of all the kinds of plants will be destroyed. We know that each day 40,000 children die. We know that every year 40 million die of hunger. We know that every hour, $1 million is spent for weapons to destroy mankind. We use most of our income, of our national income, to kill. We know today that we have nuclear bombs that are 1.5 million as much as the bomb on Hiroshima. 1.5 million as much. We can therefore destroy 1.5 million Hiroshima with the atom bombs that we have. If that is a reasonable world, then I don't know anymore what reason is. So apparently mankind has really got nuts. And something has to be done about it. Can this catastrophe be prevented? That's the great question. And that's the question we were interested in. Because we know that the mortal, as it is, as a physiological mortal, has not changed nor developed over the last 30,000 years. But we know that his intelligence has evolved. With the same brain that he had 30,000 years, his brain has evolved and developed and has brought us into that great danger, into the dark ages of science, which can destroy mankind either in 1 second or over the next 50 years through other means than the atom bomb. So that the inner man, but the inner man has not developed. Like Professor Lawrence has said, he's well known as a Nobel Prize winner, that they call Homo sapiens is not the Homo sapiens, because he has in his hand the atom bomb, but in his heart he has the instincts of the caveman. And that discrepancy is the danger. Because we give to the caveman the atom bomb and he doesn't quite know what to do with it, and so he may make a blunder of it. Now, is that situation being amended by trying to tell people that they should be more moral, more ethical, that they should be good to each other, friendly to each other? That is not the answer. One can see that the second degree can never be the answer. The Cain will always destroy the Abel, and the answer lies with death, that one that walked with God, that consciousness which walks with God, that consciousness which is isomorphic with the structure of being. That alone, as we see today, that's our thesis, can really prevent a catastrophe. So the solution is a changing consciousness, as we have seen. It needs that great paradigm shift of consciousness from what to what. And we have seen from the old science to the new science, which means away from the old science, which was constantly thinking in atomistic way, in an analytical way, in a reductionalist way, reducing everything to little bits, that we are thinking only in a linear way instead of a structural way, that we are thinking in cause and effect, that we are thinking in a one-dimensional way, with a one-dimensional logic, that we are thinking always in a mechanical way, everything we regarded as being a machine with matter and motion and making out of that a body and a machine. Everything that was seen was a material mechanism. What is the very new science, the holistic science? Holism, as we have seen, is the concept that the whole is bigger than the sum of its parts, because it is the parts plus relationship. That parts are always connected with the whole, and that we are not allowed to fragment the whole. So everything that has to do as a criteria of science must be a holistic concept. So we were considering together the holistic concept of all the criteria of science. So we have seen a new consciousness, therefore must be cultured how? So that we see and that we build on holistic elements for the first time. That those elements with which we reason must be wholes, therefore synonymous terms. They alone are wholes. They alone are elements that are always one with God, and God is a symbol for the whole. So that our consciousness must be engaged in culturing the seven synonymous terms, so that little by little we get those synonymous terms so that they form three great categories of being. The synonymous term of the nature of God, the four synonymous term of the operational sense of God, the four synonymous term for the science as the levels of science, and in culturing that we begin to have holistic categories. If we have holistic categories and see that only these categories, when they are related to each other, form a holistic system. That whole system, as we have in the chart, is showing those three holistic categories related together, interrelated together, and forming really a holistic structure. Then we have seen, though we have not made many examples with it, that by restructuring that system, we get holistic structures, and always different structures according to the relationship which we contemplate within that system. And so we get holistic structures. And from there we have seen that structures are structures upon structures upon structures, giving us the sense of a dimensional consciousness, which is holistic. Only a consciousness that has dimension within itself can take care of any experience in the human field, so that it can take care of the spiritual field, of the mental field, of the psychological field, of the material field, even the field of error, so that it is absolutely holistic, so that it can explain error from within the holistic sense, and not regard error as something outside of being, because there is no outside of a holistic wholeness. So that finally we have come to the cybernetic sense, which shows that within the whole there is an enormous dynamic going on, which one goal always to bring evolution to a higher and higher level, leaving no stone unturned to bring everyone up to the highest level, back to the oneness with God, to the unity with God. And so we have in this way a holistic concept of science. Not only have we a holistic concept of science, but we also have a holistic language of science. Little by little we get through that consciousness away from the letter. And more the tonality takes over, so that we speak the language of tonality. We have the tonality of the capitalized term, and see that that language speaks through spirit and not through the mouth and not through the letter. Therefore, it's a spiritual communication. It is a spiritual language where the sender and receiver have the same repertoire of language, the same knowledge repertoire, so that we can understand each other in a spiritual way. This is the meta language, which is looked for by all the scientists, because the human language becomes inadequate to express the holistic science. Yes, so that if through that culture the cybernetic law draws us to the oneness of being, we naturally begin to see that then all the separation, the fragmentation falls. And we begin to see the oneness of God and His creation, of God and the universe, that they are not two, that they are just one, just looked at from different viewpoints. That God and nature is one, that noumenon and phenomena is one, that the whole and its parts is one, that the transcendence and the immanence is one, principle and its manifestation is one, that the whole and its parts are one, that the subject and the object are one, no more differentiation between them, that the laws of God's spirit are the laws of nature, or vice versa, that the laws of nature are the laws of spirit. We have suddenly a oneness of theology and science, that they are not two things, but they are actually one and the same thing, because they talk both about the whole, that they are one with medicine in the true sense, because it's the one Christ, the one Redeemer, that is involved in theology and science, and that we have a one divine philosophy that explains theology, science, and medicine, so that we have a complete oneness, a fourfold oneness of theology, then of science, of medicine and philosophy. This is the science of all sciences, as we see. They apply to every field, and therefore it is the first science, the proto-science for any applied science. It's the alpha and omega of which the Revelation speaks, the first and the last in one. It is therefore a science that has only the one-valued logic and does not accept a dualistic sense or dualistic reasoning. And so we see that the structure of understanding and the structure of the being is isomorphic, one and the same form. This is the aim towards which everything evolves. This isomorphic consciousness is possible because we have seen that new science takes away in every field the restrictions of time and space. The moment that falls, then we have an unlimited field. So instead of material particles, of cells, and things like that, we have a field consciousness. And that field consciousness just pervades through everything. It pervades now in the nuclear physics. I just read quickly what they found out in physics, actually already quite long ago, that they say that things that were one time connected and then separated retain a kind of non-local connectedness among themselves. This would imply that everything in the universe is indeed connected. So even from the physical point of view, they see that every electron or every particle is connected with every other particle, no matter how far away they are. It takes us back to the idea of a common origin and the idea of our relatedness to the entire universe. And so it goes on and explains that they communicate, even in the field of electrons, they communicate with each other, they act in agreement with each other, they give orders to each other. The signals pass with higher velocity than light and therefore exchange information quicker than light. Therefore, the things happen before they are caused. The effect is before the cause. The future is only the unobserved now. And so, therefore, it knows the past, the present, and the future. Doesn't it give a terrific sense of a field without time nor space, where we drop finally the sense of past, present, and future? The same thing we have seen in the way of field in neurology, where they have found out that mind thinks the brain, that mind is an it, that it is independent of the brain, and therefore is a field all by itself. That information theory shows us in cybernetics that we live in a thinking universe, again a field, in an intelligence information universe, a universe of supra-consciousness, says the psychologist, and the biologist Seldrake says that we live in a morphogenetic field with a morphic resonance. And divine science says that mind dwells in the realm of mind. That's the field of the divine mind. And so Mrs. Eddy says, your true course is to leave the field to God. And we must leave it to the field of God. To life, truth, and love, remembering that God and his idea alone are real and harmonious. And so we get really the field of God, the atmosphere of God, and we get divine science as that science which is the atmosphere of God. So through the old sense of science, through the humanly construed sense of science, we come actually to that sense that we have a science that is the atmosphere of God. Well, so divine science is that which is really that which will occupy our thought. Think of it, what Mrs. Eddy said. The time comes when the spiritual origin of man, namely what? The divine science, which as Jesus was a human body, which ushered Jesus into human presence, will be understood and demonstrated. It's like saying, then we will understand divine science which ushered the Big Bang into existence. That's also corporeal and brought the Big Bang and the universe into existence. But its origin is in divine science. Just as divine science, which is spiritual, ushered Jesus as a corporeal being into human presence, in that way we can see the Big Bang as something that is just a phenomena, a side phenomena of divine science, which will be overformed, as we have seen, through the three baptisms, through the three advents of the Christ, to a higher sense. The divine science of man is woven into one web of consistency without seam and rent. Everything in that divine science is consistent within itself and has no outside. So that what remains to lead on the centuries, she said, and reveal my successor, is man in the image and likeness of the Father, Mother, God. Man, the generic term for mankind. Namely, through the discernment of the spiritual opposite of materiality, even the way through the Christ truth, man will reopen with the key of divine science, the gates of paradise. So we see that man, as the generic man, will reveal the successor, which is divine science. And it's up to us to see, have a concept of man that is really generic enough that it can reveal divine science, which will reopen the gates of paradise. But also we know that we can't force that. That is not just a nice desire and making up one's mind, really, to say, all right, let's do that. Mrs. Eddy considered it as a birth, as a spiritual birth. Woman, she said, must give it birth to one born of the flesh, and we are born of the flesh. However, divine science must be a discovery. Woman must give it birth. The woman sense within us must give it birth. That's why we need the motherhood and the womanhood of God cultured within ourselves. The new birth is not the work of a moment. We can't do it tonight so that we have it tomorrow. It begins with mom, but it must begin somewhere, and we better make up our minds to begin with it. It begins with moments and goes on with years. Moments of surrender to God, it needs a struggle. Of childlike trust and joyful adoption of the good. Moments of self-abdication, we have to stomach that. Of self-consecration, we have to consecrate ourselves to that idea. But also of heaven-born hope, there's a big promise on spiritual love. Time may commence, but it cannot complete the new birth. Eternity does this. For progress is the law of infinity. And that's the message I wanted to convey this week. And I think I have been quite successful in waking up the students' consciousness to the new era. So that we will no more be the same as what we were at the beginning of this week. And because we are no more the same in the holistic sense, the whole world will no more be the same because of this class. It will be a different world. And so we must see that history may record this class. Thank you.